From the best-selling Christian Heroes Then and Now series, YWAM Publishing presents John Flynn, Into the Never Never, by Janet and Jeff Benge. Read for you by Tim Gregory. For information about other titles in this outstanding series, please visit our website at ywampublishing.com or call us at 800-922-2143. Chapter 1. Braybrook. 11-year-old John Flynn helped his older brother carry the dresser from their bedroom and out the door of their simple clapboard house. Once outside, they lifted the dresser onto the wagon. It was moving day for the Flynn family. John and his father, Thomas, and John's 14-year-old brother, Eugene, and 13-year-old sister, Rosetta, were moving about 70 miles east of Snake Valley, Victoria, to the town of Braybrook, 10 miles west of Melbourne. As John heaved the solid pine furniture onto the wagon, he tried to sort out his feelings about moving again. He figured he'd done more moving than most boys his age, mainly because his mother, Rosetta, had died during childbirth when he was 2 years old. The baby had died 2 weeks later. John could not remember his mother, her funeral, or his baby brother. All he could remember was going to live with one set of relatives after another following his mother's death. John knew what his mother looked like. His father had bought 3 silver lockets, placed a photograph of his wife inside each one, and given them to his children. Normally, John kept his locket in a box beside his bed, but on special days, like today, he wore it around his neck. John wished he could remember his mother. Eugene and Rosetta had told him that she had been a kind woman and had beautiful auburn hair. And on the rarest occasions, his father would talk about her, describing her beautiful singing voice and Irish lilt. John packed up the last few things from the bedroom. "Do you have everything?" his father asked, entering the room. John nodded as he stuffed his prize rabbit skins into a duffel bag.
"Dad, will they have rabbits in Braybrook?"
Thomas Flynn chuckled. "There's nowhere in Australia safe from rabbits, son. You can have your fill of hunting them wherever you go." John smiled. Rabbit hunting was one of his favorite pastimes. He loved to quietly stalk the pasture land outside town, creep up on unsuspecting rabbits, and shoot them with his .22 caliber rifle. And, as his father had pointed out, there was no shortage of rabbits in Australia. There had been no rabbits in the country before the arrival of Europeans, who brought rabbits with them from England. Now rabbits were everywhere throughout the countryside. They were considered a pest, since they ate the crops growing in farmers' fields and the vegetables in people's gardens. Soon it was time to leave Snake Valley behind. John and his 2 siblings piled into the front of the wagon. Strangely, John was the only one of the 3 who had lived near a big city before. After his mother's death, his father had sent him to stay with his grandparents in the Sydney suburb of Summer Hill. One of John's earliest memories was sitting on the floor at the Methodist Sunday School in Summer Hill, singing with a large group of children. John had liked living with his grandparents, but in due course, his father had brought him back home to live with him and the other children. Over the years, the 3 children and their father had forged a close-knit family. Now they were all headed to Braybrook, where Thomas was to be the principal of the first public school in the area. John knew that the move was partly for the benefit of his older brother. Eugene was a brilliant student, and from Braybrook he would have the opportunity to attend University High School in Melbourne to prepare himself for college. For his part, John wasn't too worried about where he lived, as long as he could go rabbit hunting and ramble in the countryside. Although his father and brother loved nothing better than to sit and read long history and literature books, John much preferred to be outdoors with the sun beating on his back, his rifle tucked under his arm. Something about nature, the rolling countryside where cows and sheep grazed, and kangaroos, wallabies, and emus roamed, made him feel free and alive. The wagon swayed and lurched as the Flynns rode along, and soon everyone and everything was covered with a layer of red dust. John was glad when they reached Braybrook. However, many things about the new place surprised him. John had imagined living on the outskirts of a city, a place with paved roads and street lamps. Instead, he found himself in a grimy town. Braybrook was the junction for the railroad lines that joined Melbourne, along with its ports in Williamstown and Newport, to Ballarat and Adelaide in the west, and Bendigo in the north. As a result, it was a hub for industry, and many factories dotted the landscape. Like their home in Snake Valley, the Flynn's new house had no running water and no sewage system. The wastewater gathered in puddles on the lower-lying streets of the town, and once a week, a worker shoveled lime powder onto the streets to reduce the smell. Within a year of the Flynn's arrival in Braybrook, the area was struck with a typhoid fever epidemic that claimed the lives of a number of the town's residents. Thankfully, no one in the Flynn household caught the disease. Soon after the typhoid epidemic, an economic depression hit the area. Money was short, and many people lost their jobs. The depression had some effect on the Flynns. Now the rabbits John hunted became a vital part of the family's dinner menu. John also sold the rabbit skins to a local tannery. His sister, Rosetta, soon became an expert at cooking rabbit, and any extra meat was given to needy neighbors. John also speared eels in Coleroit Creek and hunted for wild mushrooms for the dinner table. When John roamed the plain that surrounded Braybrook, he seldom saw another human being. But one day, as he combed the grasslands hunting rabbits, he spotted a man in his late 20s riding on horseback. The man wore a 3-piece suit and a wide-brimmed felt hat. A gold watch chain dangled from his vest pocket. John frowned. Someone that well-dressed was clearly out of place in the grasslands around Braybrook. As the man rode closer, John recognized the rider's outsized mustache from a photo he had seen. The man was Hugh Victor McKay. Everyone in town knew that this wealthy man was scouting the area for a site to build his sunshine harvester machines. Given the hard economic times, John knew that Braybrook was eager to have such a factory built in the area to provide jobs.
"Hello, lad," Mr. McKay said as he approached John. "Any luck with the hunting?"
"Not yet, sir," John replied politely. "I was just getting started. Over that rise is a rocky patch where I often have luck."
"Oh, you should keep that under your hat," Mr. McKay laughed. "You wouldn't want me beating you over there."
John smiled. He liked the man's easy manner.
"What's your name, lad?"
Mr. McKay asked.
John Flynn, sir. My father's the local school principal."
"Ah, Thomas Flynn. I've heard good reports of him. He also preaches at the local Presbyterian church, doesn't he?"
"Yes,"
John replied.
"That's what I like to see. Good, solid Christian families here in these parts. Please tell him Hugh McKay sends his greetings.
We might be neighbors soon."
"Yes, sir,"
John said. John watched Mr. McKay ride on across the rolling grassland. Hugh McKay was one of the richest men in Victoria, and he had just told John he might be moving next door. John could hardly believe he had met this important Australian. In Braybrook, life had fallen into a steady pattern for the Flynn family. Eugene went off to attend University High School in Melbourne, suburb of Carlton, and John took over the job of chopping wood for the stove. By now, Rosetta was doing most of the housework and cooking for the family. When John turned 16, he began attending University High School, while Eugene went on to college to train as a teacher. John was not a natural student and had to work hard to make good grades. Because he knew how important this was to his father, he spent many hours poring over his textbooks. He passed his final exams at high school in 1898, which qualified him to go on to college. In his recommendation for John, the high school principal wrote, "John matriculated, passed his exams, within 16 months. This was due to his commendable industry and perseverance, as well as to his intellectual ability. He is one of the most trustworthy, painstaking, and upright pupils this school has had for some time." John could tell that his father was delighted with the recommendation. Both of Thomas's sons were doing well with their education. Eugene had just earned his teaching certificate and was destined for a bright career. Although no one knew where John would end up, his school reports showed he had the right work ethic to get wherever he wanted to go. That summer, the Flynn family spent the Christmas holiday together. During this time, John had to decide what he was going to do in the coming year. It was hard to imagine more study. He wanted to be free of all that, but he knew that his father would not approve. Education was very important to Thomas. John wished that he were more like Eugene, who was about to embark upon a teaching career at a city school. However, in early February 1899, Eugene began to feel ill with a stomach ache and high fever. Could it be typhoid fever? John and his father took Eugene to the hospital in Melbourne, but within days, Eugene was dead. The Flynn family and the local community were shocked. Eugene Flynn had had such a bright future ahead of him, and now, at age 22, his life was over. His funeral was held on February 16th, and John sat numb through the service. He could scarcely take it in. Eugene had always been a kind and attentive big brother. Life seemed very fragile to John. "Work while it is day, for the night cometh when no man can work," the officiating minister said as Eugene's coffin was lowered into the ground. John wondered what kind of work he should do. What work would be worthwhile? John wasn't sure, but he knew he needed to spend his life doing something that would make a difference in the lives of others.